Members, that's it for the House only sheet. So we'll move to the Senate only sheet. All right. Folks, as you can see, this page is a lot longer than the House was, and we'll try to work through this. Members, in regards to the Vehicle Crimes Task Force, Chair Hornstein and I were asked that maybe since there was such a issue with the funding of that, that we hold that program until next year. And I think that that would be appropriate. What about you, Chair Hornstein?
Thank you. I agree, Mr. Chairman. We had some concerns from the Department of Public Safety and possibly even the governor's office, and we start getting into that kind of conversation. We need to get this bill passed, and I think it's good policy, and we should wait till next year. And I just also want to clarify that correct a statement I made earlier. We did hear this in Transportation Finance. If I implied that we didn't hear it at all in the House and the Finance Committee, we did hear it, but I think it is best to be cautious if there's concerns from the agency and the governor's office.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hortman.
Just a quick question. Representative Hornstein, do you know if we move that bill out of the committee, and is it on the general register so that if Representative Hillstrom were able to work something out with the departments, she could still move it this year?
Mr. Chairman, that would be my understanding. So the bill would still have another possible avenue. So that it'll need more time, and it's probably more appropriate that we not put it in this bill.
Thank you.
All right. The Senate, we do have a lot of sections here. And Representative Hornstein, we sat down and we talked, and we were going to do this side just like we did the House side. If there's any heartburn at all, it's not gonna live. So, we're ready to go with our side. I can start off here for the House on pages R1 and R2. This language is a Senator Scoey proposal, and this deals with considering for insurance purposes that a truck and trailer are a single motor vehicle. Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, are you calling for that they should, you're going to vote on each one as we go through, or are you just getting comments?
Representative Leader, we wanted to do the same thing that we did with the House side. We'll talk about it. If it seems acceptable and somebody makes a motion, we'll vote. All right? But I think most everybody knows what is in these two bills. So this is the issue about the for insurance purposes to treat this combination as one vehicle.
Mr. Chair, are you asking for a motion? I'll move that Senate position.
There's more than one provision here. Ms. Berzovsky.
Mr. Chair, on the second page of the Senate-only provisions, three down, it refers to the other section, which is on R35, that provides that when there's a vehicle combination and there's an accident and an agent of the owner is driving the vehicle, the agent is considered to be the owner of the self-propelled vehicle and not an agent of the owner of any trailer in the combination. So those two were part of the same initiative.
Representative Leader, did you want to move that language?
I did.
Okay. I was just checking.
I didn't hear the second part. I'm sorry.
Well, it's all one thing, so. Representative Hornstein.
I'm just trying to clarify with our staff, Mr. Chairman, what where this was at in our House process.
We're just starting in on the
Just for the Senate's information, the House did vote on this proposal, and it didn't turn out very well. Is this the one?
No, that's a different one. Mr. Chairman, I think this never went to transportation. I think it went to commerce. Is that my answer?
It's
in transportation.
Representative Morrow.
Representative Horstein, I'm just checking. My recollection is that we actually did hear this at one point. I think there was a Representative Welty bill. There was also a Representative Holberg file.
Yes.
Although I can't recall whether we heard the Holberg as well.
Okay. I now know what you're talking about.
A bill, but I don't know if I heard it.
Representative Hortman?
Chair, I know that there's a Holberg measure that's very similar to this on the General Register. And my understanding that the Holberg-Atkins file that's moving in the House is also moving in the Senate. It just seems like this issue should be resolved in one conversation on the House floor rather than putting something we don't maybe fully understand in the conference committee report.
We're checking. Representative Hornstein.
I apologize. I thought we were on a different provision. I now remember this very well, and I think it ended up being quite controversial. There were two different versions being shopped around, and it's my understanding that there's still no consensus among the stakeholders about it.
I talked to other people. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, you want me to withdraw the amendment? I can do that.
Let's
first provision.
We're on the first provision.
Second provision.
Okay. So they're going to get a vote.
Yeah. So, and then we just move on.
Member, Senator Scoy moved this all the way through the Senate process, went through three committees, and went to the Senate floor, and then he put it in this bill and took his bill off the calendar and returned it to the authors. So the standalone bill's dead.
Oh, no.
Is everybody ready to vote? I am. On the leader motion to include those sections, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The chair is in doubt. All ayes, raise your hand. The motion fails.
Okay.
All right. We're moving along. The next section deals with a, and this is just a very small amendment, and it was supposed to be carried in the K-12 bill, but we don't know if there's going to be a K-12 bill. So this is, it just lays out a very narrow definition. Excuse me. It lays out a very narrow definition of when a school bus driver can actually lead the seat and escort a student across the street or whatever.
Mr. Chair, there.
Senator Saltzman.
There, on this point, what it says is that you can also include an after-school program as a drop-off location for a school bus as opposed to just your home. So this was brought in by Senator Anderson from St. Paul.
Ms. Pierzowski?
Mr. Chair, yes. This has to do with calculating school transportation aid entitlement, and it allows them to factor in certain after-school programs as the student's residence for purposes of calculating aid.
Senator Devil.
And as I understand, Mr. Chair, this reflects current practice, taking kids to park shelters and the like for their after-school programs. That happens now, and it also, as a matter of policy, just simply authorizes that as a practice.
Senator Saltzman would move that provision. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. The next one is strictly a designation for Highway 59, the Veterans Memorial Highway. Senator Saltzman would move that provision. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. Ms. Bierzowski, can you help us with the, I believe it's the next two. These are department initiatives.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The next two have to do with design-build contracts. And the first provision says that a shortlisted proposer is entitled to receive a stipend even if the proposal comes in above the maximum price, as long as the bid is responsive in all other respects. And the second provision allows the commissioner to reject all bids, then reissue an RFP just to the shortlisted teams. And then the shortlisted responsible proposers in that rebid situation are entitled to a stipulated fee, again, even if the proposal comes in above the maximum price, as long as it's responsive otherwise. And I believe this is a MnDOT initiative.
Does anybody in the House have an issue with this MnDOT language? All right, then Senator Sieben would move the MnDOT proposal on R9, lines 8.23, 8.32, 8.33, 9.15. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. Members, the next...
Wait, Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
I believe you just moved the wrong language, because I think we wanted to move the language on 8.1 all the way through 8.32.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We need a motion to reconsider. Reconsider the vote. That. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Sieben, why don't you help me out here and you state
so
the motion.
So we'd move the language on 8.1 of the Senate file reference, 8.1 all the way through 8.32. Right.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you. The next one is starts with the Complete Streets initiative, and there are several sections. Ms. Bierzowski, can you help us identify the sections that deal with Complete Streets?
Mr. Chair, there is that next one on R9, and then there is two down from that, R10 and 11. And those are similar county state aid highway standards and municipal state aid street standards. Then on the next page of Senate only, if you're following the Senate only provisions, it's about two-thirds of the way down where it says contains provisions. It's on R61, okay. And that is the main complete streets
talk to Joel right now.
Section. And then we have... on the last page, about a third of the way up on R91.
All right, and that's a Complete Streets proposal, and it's... You have an amendment for the...
It's something the reviser suggested for clarity.
All right. And we do have a reviser's amendment for the Complete Streets. Ms. Bierzowski, maybe you can help us with the reason this is needed.
Mr. Chair and members, the reviser questioned whether the sections on the CASA standards and the MSA standards... was whether those were clear as they were drafted, and he asked that we just pull out the exception to the variances and make it a separate sentence. Mm-hmm. It's really technical. It's not intended to change anything in the program.
My understanding is that Complete Streets is on the House.
No, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the Complete Streets bill actually did pass the floor. I think it was a strong bipartisan vote of confidence, so we feel good about putting this in the bill.
Okay. Senator Salzman.
You know, I do have some language here on the state park road account, which is section 13, starting on line 9.18. Mr. Meyer gave me some information and suggested a little different language, so I don't know if you want to have him speak to that.
Senator Salzman, that's different than the complete streets. That's a DNR request there.
Okay, very good.
All right, Senator Salzman would move the complete streets language with the reviser's amendment. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. The next one is... the next one is the one, I believe, that Senator Salzman was talking about. Senator Salzman, that issue is still unresolved between the DNR, MnDOT, and the county officials. So I don't think that we need to pick it up.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The next issue for discussion, it's the one that says clarifies that the exemption of a federally owned emergency vehicles from license plate display requirements. This is... Ms. Berzoski, correct me if I'm right, but this is just some technical language to help us comply with federal regulations.
Mr. Chair, it's a department initiative, and it's a clarification of existing law.
So any questions on that? Senator Dibble would move that section. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. members, the next one is it allows the issuance of a personalized vertical motorcycle plate. There's a $100 fee on this. We heard testimony that some of these motorcycles are equipped with only a vertical stand on the back of their motorcycle, so instead of having to take out a buzzsaw and cutting it off, put something on different. And the department was comfortable with this, so Senator Jungbauer would move that language. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail.
And the associated sections as well.
Right, and the associated sections that go with that. next is a special license plate fund for retired firefighters. does anybody want to move that section? Representative Erdahl moves the Senate language in regards to the special license plates for the retired firefighters. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. The next one was the vertical. The next issue is it authorizes special plates for remembering victims of impaired drivers. There's also a $10 associated fee with that. There's several other references in this description to that. And that's, once again, the language for the victims of impaired drivers. Do we have a motion? There's no motion. We'll move to the next one. Adds, this is a cross-reference to allow the Korean Defense Service veterans special license plates to be issued on a motorcycle plate.
It goes with the next section.
And it goes, okay, it goes with the next session or section, which is the Bronze Star, Silver Star, and several other expeditionary medals. Well, I think those next three sections all play together. The third one is... it's for these same set of veterans plates to be put on one-ton pickups or recreational vehicles. Is there a motion on those three? Moving right along.
That last one is the Sengem that just expand. That relates to existing plates to let them RVs and existing vet plates.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe we'll come back to that, not that one. The very last thing on that page is the American Red Cross special plates. Do we have a motion? No motion. Turning to page two, this is some language that would allow a peace officer to impound a vehicle when the driver's been arrested or taken into custody.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hornstein.
I would like maybe Mr. Burris to refresh our memory on the what path, if any, this took in the House. The House generally is a little more controversial.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm just looking for my sheet, but I believe that this provision was originated in public safety in the House and then came to transportation policy, but wasn't heard in that committee.
Okay. Well, I defer to some of our members here, but I think we hadn't heard this, and I think it's a problem to move forward on something we haven't heard in our committee.
That's right. It didn't pass. Do we have a motion on that? No motion. All right. The next one was one we already voted on. The next one establishes a violation of $100 penalty for pedestrians who violate the rail arm down law. Do we have a motion? The House doesn't look too thrilled. Moving right along. The next one allows a hearse to display a rear-only license plate. Some of the hearses are not made with a bracket for the front. Senator Sieben would move that. Yes, Senator or Representative Erdahl.
Quick question. Is that, I mean, a hearse that's under the operation of a funeral home or just, mm-hmm. I mean, somebody just, what if some has a hearse?
Ms. McCormick, I believe there's a definition in statute for that. Or maybe we can have the State Patrol. Ms. Tershner, you want to come up? That is a good question.
I've known college kids that did that.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I didn't hear what the question was.
Well, Ms. McCormick, the question from Representative Erdahl was, does this have to be a hearse under the operation of a funeral director, or can anybody go out and buy a hearse and start riding around with one license plate?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Pat McCormick from DVS and Department of Public Safety, there isn't a specific definition for a hearse, and it's very problematic for us because there's various versions, and there aren't special types of vehicles for us to be able to identify what is a hearse. It would be problematic for us to be able to do that.
Okay, we'll move on then. There's the motion to adopt that has been withdrawn. The next are changes to the law concerning the driver's license suspension for failure by a Minnesota resident to appear in court or pay a petty misdemeanor fine for an offense in Minnesota or in another state. These next two this is a department initiative. Okay, we'll just move to the next one down. This is also a department bill. This allows Commissioner of Public Safety to exempt Type 3 driver from required physical qualifications upon evidence the driver has been medically examined and certified within 24 previous months.
Was this the answer?
Senator Sieben would move that language.
Because I think it was...
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Senator Murphy.
Yes.
There was that mistake, and there's that one provision that we left out that falls in there.
Which?
On R41 to R43, okay. It's that type 3 standards that mm-hmm. would require them to be trained to escort people across the street. It's that.
Oh, it's this one that we just adopted?
No, that's fine. Uh-huh. It's the one, it's 34.2 to 3610.
We didn't adopt
it. It's your
that.
Type, no, and we mm-hmm. goofed up the description on that. That's your type 3 bill to some of the type 3
oh, okay. We're going to go back to that one that we just did before, Ms. Berzosky. We skipped.
Mr. Chair, we made a mistake on the list. The provision that's at R41 to R43, 34.2 to 36.10, is incorrectly described on here. And it's a provision that amends the standards for type 3 vehicle operators. It would require training on escorting pupils across the road. And also it allows drivers, employers to utilize a breathalyzer for the drug and alcohol testing that they're required to perform.
Representative Hornstein.
Well, Mr. Chair, our staff said that this wasn't even heard in any committee in the House. So,
it's a different one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is in the education bill.
It's in the education bill. There's a lot of information coming to me. I'm sorry, I retract that.
You're right.
Looking at all a different.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe there's a question for Mr. Burris. I seem to recall this is a Representative Ansel's bill and that the school districts mm-hmm. had come forward, and I understand you say it may be in the K-12 bill. I'm not sure which bill it properly belongs in, but is this the language that Representative Ansel's was moving through to clean up some of the things we had done regarding Type 3 school buses at the request of school districts?
Oh, you're going to this
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, I'm not actually sure if Representative Ansel's was the one who had moved this, but this language is in the House K-12 bill, along with some other pupil transportation provisions, including the one that was just adopted by the conference committee.
Well, Mr. Chair, we did not hear this, though, in transportation policy. We didn't hear any testimony at all. If it is moving in another vehicle, perhaps this isn't the time to do it here as well.
Senator Saltzman.
I'd like to see it in here because we don't know if there's going to be an education bill, and I think with pupil safety issues, I'm not saying there isn't going to be a transfer or an education bill, but in the past we have struggled with getting some policy bills off on off years. So just want to note that. I think that this has to do with some pupil safety issues. So. But if it's an issue with the House, I certainly defer to you.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Saltzman, I certainly understand that there are type 3 issues. I mm-hmm. got caught in the middle of that a couple of years ago. I'm just not sure, for example, on the language about the breathalyzer or the alcohol testing, without having heard anything on our side among the five of us, that's the challenge I'm having to move on it right now.
So here's the deal, Mr. Senator Chair. Saltzman. It's not in the Senate Education Bill. So the Senate Education Committee would probably say the same things because we tend to defer those to the Transportation Committee.
What do you guys want to do? Okay, let's flip a coin. Morrow, you ready? Call it in the air. No, wait a minute. Uh-huh. Heads I win, tails you lose.
You always win, Mr. Chair.
Great. All right. Senator Saltzman moves that provision. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. I was just joking about flipping a coin for the tape's purpose so I don't get in trouble. All right. The next is a bill that was in the Senate only, and this deals with a disadvantaged business enterprise program. This is a thing that Representative Champion, Senator Higgins, the department, and a lot of contractors and a lot of DBEs got together and hammered this out. And members, I really believe that this is the appropriate thing to do, and I think that we ought to move all this DBE language at one time. There's a little bit of money in the bill so that we can get this program up and running. The collaborative is working, and we want to make sure that we have access to highly trained business owners in this area. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to hear from MnDOT on this and how they're progressing.
Okay. Ms. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. Members, again, Scott Peterson from MnDOT. The language that's in the Senate version of the bill is basically puts in statute the existing collaborative and endorses the issues that the collaborative has already formed work teams to try and find solutions for. So this, the department is fine with this language.
Okay. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And while Mr. Peterson is up here, just another question to save it for later. Establishing a commission and such, there are expenses to these things. There's several other things in this bill that do establish expenses that apparently MnDOT is willing to take over. Do you have any number on how much expense overseeing in this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erdahl, I don't have an aggregate number that I can share with you right now. I do have a copy of the fiscal note. I could go through and look it up. I can say with respect to this particular provision, though, there's nothing in the language with reference to the collaborative that requires us to do anything else than what we already intend to do. I mean, we are already investing resources in this collaborative effort. We're committed to doing better on our DBE participation rate and our on-the-job training to foster more inclusion and include more people of color in our contract workforce. So, I mean, in this particular instance, we don't see it as any additional fiscal impact at all.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for the House members, we heard this bill a couple of times, both in I think we heard it once in finance, but this language is very, very different than the original Bobby Champion bill and the amended Bobby Champion bill. And so there's no requirements, there's no numerical or mandates, there's no numerical mandates. So this was discussed on the Senate side. I believe the main stakeholders of this issue were involved in it. So it's for the House members, it's very different than what we heard. And I think, you know, given MnDOT's comfort level with it, I would support it.
So the members of the House, I was involved in a lot of the negotiations around the language that is in the House bill, as was Mr. Peterson and several other people at MnDOT. Everybody walked away not only with a firm handshake, but a commitment to make this work. And I think that this is a great initiative and I think it's a great initiative. And so
I would move it then, Mr. Chairman. Move the.
Yes. And this is for all sections related to this issue.
So we're dealing, so very specifically, Mr. Chairman, it's. Mm-hmm.
We have Ms. Pierzowski.
47 and 4 through 49.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chair. It's R 47 to 49, 39.3 to 40.23. And then it's also on R 81. There is 62.3 to 62.8 that designates $200,000 of the existing appropriation to MnDOT for infrastructure investment support the second year for nonprofit job training centers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's this one here.
The first bullet.
The first bullet point, members.
Right. So is everybody clear what the amendment does? It establishes a program and funds it. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Next, we move to the household goods movers. Do we have a motion?
Household goods.
We've got to go to the next page, right?
Yeah, that goes.
And that's the end of page two.
Start with the second one on the next page.
I believe it is, yes.
On page three of the Senate-only provisions, members, we're getting close to the end. This requires that the commissioner of the Department of Public Safety permit a deputy registrar to operate in Dakota County. It moves from the existing location in Burnsville to the Burnhaven Library in Burnsville. There is a little bit of contention with this, members, but Dakota County is moving that because it's a cost savings on the building. And Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to say they're only moving the location 2 miles, too. So it's really not that big of a change.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the risk of asking a question I don't want to know the answer to, are the people who represent Dakota County and Burnsville all in agreement on what should happen here?
Representative Hortman, Mr. Barry is here to Mr. Tilly, Mr. Barry Tilly, related to Dwight Twilley. Never mind. Yes, I believe that the county and the city is in agreement. Unfortunately, I believe there's two deputy registrars that may not be as amenable. Mr. Tilly.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Barry Tilly, and I'm here representing the Dakota County Board of Commissioners. Yes, Dakota County and Burnsville are both in agreement and supportive of this provision. Under current law, the Dakota County has filed for a permission from the Department of Public Safety to move the deputy registrar that's owned and operated by Dakota County from one spot in Burnsville to another spot in Burnsville. Two corporate deputy registrars, one in Prior Lake, one in Apple Valley, protested the move. We're moving closer to those two. We're moving farther away from five others in Eagan, Bloomington. I forget where they're all at, but very supportive. We're moving it into the Burnhaven Library, which we're remodeling to consolidate the county services.
Thank you.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that language on 53.1 to 53.15.
Mm-hmm. All right. you know, members, there's you know, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there's like 2.5 to 3 pages of rules written on just what the metropolitan, the moving or the establishment of deputy registers in the metropolitan area. And that's just the ones in rules. And we've got more in statute as well. The only thing that I would ask Ms. McCormick is that in the future, I think that we need to think of an economic standard that we have to meet outside of the about 4 other parameters that are in rule. Maybe something with, what the economic impact is going to be for the, the surrounding deputies. I think before we start moving these around all across the metropolitan area, we kind of need to know what that might be. So on the Sieben motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail.
We didn't put this.
Let's see. The next two, Ms. Berzofsky.
Mr. Chair, the next two provisions relate to, these came from a floor amendment from Senator Clark to appropriate $36,000 for a grant to St. Cloud to pay for the transit, the cost of providing free transit to disabled veterans, which is a statewide provision. It's general fund money.
Mm-hmm. And members, we were told not to put general fund money in here for several different things, and I think this might have been one of them. So Representative Hornstein.
Alan, Mr. Chair, we already had a dust up on the House floor just on this bill already on free transportation services, so I don't think the House would want to go in that direction here.
The free transportation services are in law. But.
What? Yeah. On this one?
No. Well, the, okay. The
it's already existing. It's just pays for.
Okay.
Well, I think we should probably just leave that one alone. The next issue is the second bullet point under the state road fiscal appropriations. And Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As members know, the Hastings Bridge is going to begin construction for replacement of the bridge this summer. It's the busiest two-lane bridge in the state right now, and there is some precedent for doing this type of arrangement to mitigate traffic congestion in the area when a large bridge project is occurring. A similar provision, or I thought of this idea because bus service from Cottage Grove was initially established when the Wakota Bridge was beginning construction, and now that is continuing. I'd also just point out to members that this is permissive language. It would allow MnDOT to do this if it sees the need. It doesn't say that they have to do it, however. Mm-hmm. I think that the $500,000 is a bit high, so I'm happy to move language to strike $500,000 and move that to $250,000.
Okay. That would be part of your motion?
That would be part of my motion. And okay. Members, there, like I said, there is bus service in Cottage Grove. Hastings is 6 miles to the south. So the idea here is that if the commissioner sees the need once the construction begins, bus service could be established in Hastings to get people to the park and ride in Cottage Grove and then continue on. So that's why $250,000 may even be more than is needed. But like I said, this is just permissive language. It gives the commissioner the authority to do it if the need arises.
Discussion. Representative Erdahl.
Well, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Stephen cited one reference. And is this commonly done across the state, just in the metro area? Is it done for other places besides bridges?
Representative Erdahl, in my 18 years, it's been done one time, and that was in the same corridor when they were fixing up the rest of the, you know, through Newport and Cottage Grove. There was existing service there, and so they spent some trunk highway money to enhance that service because of the road construction difficulties going through there. Now, MnDOT has looked at this, and they have the, you know, and all the best laid plans of mice and men sometimes crash down around your head, but MnDOT has laid out a very good plan for this bridge, and they think that they're only going to have that choked down to one lane a very limited number of days. They said that they would utilize this option only if they had to. And we can get MnDOT up here on the record to say exactly that, but that's what they said in our committee. And Senator Sieben's right. If they need to use it, they will. If not, they won't. And MnDOT really saw that this is just being permissive, and if they needed a little help, they'd be able to use this. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm supportive of this request for a couple of reasons. I think in the Cottage Grove instance, it was a huge benefit during that time of fairly significant congestion through a really tough that was related to the Wakota Bridge and all. It was a bad deal. I don't know if the studies are in, but it created, you know, somewhat of a mode shift. A lot, you know, folks who weren't using transit before stuck with it. I also know that Hastings is, you know, like a lot of folks, a lot of communities outside the transit taxing district, they can get service, they'll come in. That seems to be a good idea, too. So for those reasons, both to address the immediate circumstance of the construction and then for future implications.
All right. On that motion, I think we're ready to vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. The next one is Senator Jungbauer, Senator Jung Bauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I've been working with Met Council on coming up with some language here on at least mentioning the city of Ramsey as an infill station on the North Star commuter line. Obviously, we're all worried about setting some precedent. In this case, members, I don't think it sets any precedent in as much as the city of Ramsey's been mentioned in all the federal work we've done in on the North Star. The city has been designed around this station coming to it at some point in time. There's been both local and federal monies put into the city for the parking ramp that exists there where this proposed station would be in the future. And actually, there's been language passed at both the city and the county level in support of a station there in the future. And the city has actually put on public record that they would vote themselves into the transit taxing district. So, members, what I want to see, and we'll get Judd Shettman up to talk about this, but we don't want Met Council, because it's out of the taxing district, we don't want to force them to put it into their priority list. We weren't looking for that. Both Senators Franken and Klobuchar have money at the federal level tagged for a future station here. Like I say, the city and the county have made it clear that they will put their portions forward. But I think that Met Council's fine with just saying that Met Council shall consider Ramsey as an infill station in the North Star line in the future. I think it's that simple to put it in there so that we don't lose the Q money at the federal government and that sort of thing, just by keeping Ramsey mentioned in the
Mr. Shettman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Judd Shettman. I'm the Government Affairs Director for Met Council. That is, Senator Jung Bauer is correct. We were very uncomfortable with the way that the amendment passed on the floor. Senator and I have talked, and I understand his wanting to have the city of Ramsey potential stop mentioned. And the best that the council can do, because we are afraid of the precedent setting as far as naming infill stations and stations within the legislature, we think is a really bad a road to go down. But in order to help the senator, we would be happy to have the language change to say that the council shall consider the North Star commuter rail station at the city of Ramsey in the vicinity of the city of Ramsey Municipal Center. And I know Representative Hortman has a similar request in Coon Rapids that as long as the language say the council shall consider, rather than having us prioritize infill stations, that is a bad precedent, because what happens is that when we put things into our CIP, we have to basically prioritize things that way, and we start getting things out of order. And also with federal funds, oftentimes we need local matching dollars, and the TAB, the Transportation Advisory Board, handles that piece, and I think we really need to keep the integrity of that process in place. But if they want us to consider this, we certainly can, and I think that will make everybody happy.
Okay. Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if Senator Jung Bauer has identified his amendment, but I'd like to amend his amendment. And the situation that we're in is the governor vetoed the entire part of the transit portion of the bonding bill.
Right.
And in the bonding bill, we both had mentioned, and both the Ramsey station and the Coon Rapids Foley station were part of the original North Star plan that would have been built if the legislature had approved funding in 2003 or 2004. If I could read how it would go, if to be fair to both of us. My proposed language is on page R90 on the Senate side at 6824. Change the word station to stations.
It's which page now?
Page R90.
Okay.
On the bottom left.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Change station to stations. 6824. And city to cities. On line 6825, add before the period and Coon Rapids.
Okay.
And then on page R91 at 6826, Senator Jung Bauer had proposed to strike the word designate and insert the word consider. And I would have us also strike the word A. make the word station stations. And then on line 6827, Senator Youngbauer is proposing to put a period after center, and before the period I would insert "and in Coon Rapids at Foley Boulevard."
Okay, did council has it? Senator Dibble.
Well, Mr. Chair, a question to Mr. Shetland. Now that we have House amendments, and I guess not just speaking about the Senate position, it's always awkward, of course, when you're supposed to defend the Senate provision, but I did get up and give a speech on the floor when he offered this amendment. So, you know, my concern, of course, is, you know, the standard that we've held to pretty well in the state and in these committees to not politicize our capital improvement program, either on the...
Yeah. What's that?
You know, we only fund bonding priorities after they've appeared in the, you know, in the transportation planning documents that the Met Council compiles. We don't reach in and try to elevate. We try, but we usually defeat efforts to elevate particular road, highway, bridge, and interchange projects on the MnDOT side so as to not just create this political free-for-all. The only things that ever get funded are those who have the political mo to get them funded. Are we going down this path? I mean, I know that Met Council already kind of violated this principle when they supported any consideration of Dan Patch and supported statutory language, maintaining that statutory language. So we're not pure, and Met Council is not pure on this question, but we want to remain as pure as possible. Are we going down this path, or is this softening the language enough so as to not go down this path? I'm asking Mr. Shetland first.
Mr. Shetland.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, we are going down that path, but we are not on the terribly slippery slope that the previous language would have made that occur.
What we're trying to find out, Mr. Shetland, is this veto bait?
Mr. Chair and members, it is not. The council's position on this was to have the provision removed. And out of speaking with Senator Youngbauer, he kindly asked that the council work with him to come up with some language that will satisfy his want to have the city of Ramsey Station mentioned. Mm-hmm. And in a way that it doesn't give the council heartburn, in a way where we are getting out of order as far as the council's priorities in our transportation planning.
All right,
and
Representative Hornstein.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that, Mr. Shetland, and I, you know, the reason that I have very similar concerns that Senator Dibble has about the precedent, but the reason we were worried about the veto issue is that we had a provision in this bill last year. This bill was vetoed in part because we had it's not apples and oranges, but a very similar thing where we said the high-speed rail shall go through La Crosse. Now, maybe the wording was a little different. Maybe it was more mandatory. I don't recall it. But when we get into that business of designating very specific stations on transit lines and stops, you know, that's what drew a veto last year. So maybe this language is a little it's only permissive, and so that might be different. But I have that's my concern is not over the policy. It's over whether we get this bill signed.
Yeah. Members, here's what's going to happen with this bill. We're going to go ahead and finish the list and everything and kind of vote on the overall bill. We're going to leave it open until Monday because we still need to talk with the governor's office, make sure everything's copacetic. Like we said, we don't want to get this thing vetoed. So, Mr. Shetland, this is one thing. If we put this in the bill, you got to come back and tell us Monday that it's okay.
Mr. Chair, members, I do not see this creating a problem as far as veto bait in the bill. I think giving the council the ability to consider is much different than what was originally included in the bill. It's permissive. We will consider it. We may not. I can assure you, at least from the council's perspective, that we will not say that this is gives us nearly the heartburn that it had before, and it shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. Okay. On the Jungbauer amendment, as
Mr.
amended
Chair.
By Representative Hortman, Senator Jungbauer.
I do want to be very clear that, again, when something is in a project through basically its entirety and then didn't get built or funded, we are only setting the precedent that should another project in the future get funded and something be excluded in that. That's the only precedent we potentially are setting here. If we were setting a precedent for designating things at any given time, I would not be in favor of this. It is the fact that these have been in the project submittals from the beginning, and we feel that they should continue to be in those things. So that precedent, if any, is so limited in scope that we're just not going to be facing this issue every year.
Okay, on the Jungbauer-Hortman motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. Next, we have an issue, and actually, this is Senator Salzman's bill. So, Senator Salzman, I'll let you run.
Right, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much. Now, this was actually not a bill, but it came out of some conversations with MnDOT when we have looked at how are we going to really encourage and keep the new St. Croix River Bridge crossing moving forward. And one of the things that we talked about is what are some of the potential value capture or public-private partnership options that could be used in the construction of that bridge. And it seemed important that we require MnDOT to look into that. It would be helpful for them to have that direction from the legislature. It is a bridge that's extremely important to our border communities, especially in my community, and Representative Buns. So this is just asking them to report back to us with some of those funding options might be. It puts more information on the table as we work with Wisconsin, especially because we have hit a few speed bumps with them. So,
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not recall seeing anything like this in the House. I did a little research.
You did not, right? And you did
there
not.
Was there a House bill even introduced?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, this was not a bill. This was an amendment that was added to Senator Murphy's bill.
Oh, okay.
It came in this some of the issues that have happened since our bill introduction deadlines that we've had discussions regarding some court cases, et cetera, and some of the potential bumps that we've hit, it would be really helpful to have this kind of information on the table. Wisconsin has not appropriated money for this bridge yet. They are looking at some options, but having more, it's really more information and looking at this would be very helpful. It is something that I think that we've talked about in terms of as we fund our infrastructure in the future. We have a project that some might feel is ripe for this, even though we've appropriated dollars for this particular bridge crossing. So it's just information. It's not directing us to go in any particular direction.
Okay.
Since Senator Salzman, what about the amendment that I had to this that would close the Stillwater Bridge and then put a toll gate up on I-94, only coming into Minnesota?
I like it. That, Mr. Chair, I think was part if we didn't figure out how to handle the traffic coming from Wisconsin with the unsafe semis that were coming across the current lift bridge.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Representative Erdahl. And then Senator Dibble. Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman, since you brought that up, I floated a similar idea. I'm just throwing this out there, and it'll quickly fall to the table. But a little known fact, if you put toll booths on the Wisconsin and Iowa borders, just on our side, it would be $21 million a year. And just think about funding a Viking stadium with that.
Wow.
Mm. And whop.
Yeah.
Senator Dibble.
Well, I was just hoping that we could also roll our tuition and tax reciprocity troubles into this fix here.
Yeah. Wisconsin has, in some regards, not been the best of neighbors here as of late. I mean, we've got the tuition thing hanging out, the tax reciprocity. We were at a meeting.
Spare time.
Where was that? Not
it was Woodbury.
Mm-hmm. In Woodbury, and it was just There's a reason why I don't have much hair on the back of my head, Chair Hornstein. I pulled it out after that meeting. Those folks in Wisconsin, I don't know, they just, yeah. Anyway, is there further discussion on this?
Mr. Chair, I mean, I don't have an issue with the policy here, but I guess it does require a report. And so normally there's some issues that, I don't know if MnDOT has a issue one way or the other on it. They can do it with existing resources, that's fine. Mm-hmm. If they're neutral, that's helpful to know. I mean, we can make the decision ourselves would be.
Mr. Peterson said that they would, the cost is not a problem and the policy is okay. All right.
And they helped craft the language for this that was okay. Is helpful, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Hortman. No? Okay. Senator Saltzman moves that provision. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. Let's see. The next one was Complete Streets. That's done. The next one, two, three, all four, all deal with trunk highway bonds, and those are going to be coming at us from a different perspective. Ms. Pierzowski, did we do the second to the bottom already?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe we did. You did adopt another related provision earlier that allows the commissioner to exempt Type 3 drivers from physical qualifications upon receipt of certain evidence. But then this second-to-last provision allows the commissioner to establish those qualifications without having to go to rulemaking.
All right. And this was a department initiative, is that correct? Yes. Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't have the materials in front of me, but I believe that as this moved through the House, this provision was actually changed to go into statute rather than be session law, and that's for legislative history tracking purposes and make it a little bit easier to see what kind of rulemaking or non-rulemaking authority exists. So I just point that out that it would be a technical difference from what's been discussed in the House.
Okay. And that technical difference doesn't sound like all that much. You all right?
Yeah. Just got a little pang. Sorry.
do we have an AED? Or? all right. Well, then Senator Jungbauer would move that that provision. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. And the last one we don't have to deal with. Now, I believe that Representative Morrow, did you have
Senator Murphy, I believe that Senator Skoy may be wanting to talk with you about an issue. We were on a different page on something.
Okay. Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to go back to page 2, item number 4. I believe I saw how I got over it if I was left the room there to eat something for a minute. But I think it's an important one. It's the section that establishes a violation carrying a $100 penalty for pedestrians who walk past the railroad arms or what other signals are there. And, members, I think it's important. It's not in the law today, but especially as we move through more commuter rail and LRT, I'd like to see this provision in the law to make sure.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd support that. I told Representative Beard I would help him with this mm-hmm. particular language, but I didn't want to amend it onto one of my bills on the House floor because we generally have very long debates when we talk about Section 169 of Minnesota laws. So like to support Representative Beard here.
Okay. On the Jungbauer-Hortman-Beard motion to amend,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hornstein.
Was there an issue that I think maybe the United... Did the UTU have an issue with this? I don't remember. I got some correspondence, so I just wanted to make sure that.
Mr. Qualley.
Mr. Chairman, committee, thank you very much. I am Philip Qualley, State Director for the United Transportation Union, representing the men and women who operate the trains. We just want to express our concern with this. In theory, we would support this as the train crews. that operate. And anything that we can do to advance public safety is something we fully support. However, I'm concerned that this has not been fully vetted. I think that the entire issue of trespassing and crossing at pedestrian ways, the definitions that are in the railroad section of the state law, really should be more fully discussed and looked at. I would also like to mention that we do have one location in Minnesota at this time that is an outstanding issue down by Black Dog, Xcel Energy, Union Pacific Railroad crossing plant that is a vexing concern. We're trying to straighten out with MnDOT and the FRA at this time. And again, we just think that this perhaps should be more fully vetted as to what's contained. Finally, I think it's in our best interest that we look more at preventative protections for the public at crossings. I have to trust that the committee is aware that remote control locomotives are increasing in the state of Minnesota, which means you have locomotives that do not have a person on the front end on the equipment. Remote control locomotive in our operations are increasing and moving back and forth over public crossings. So we'll certainly support whatever this committee and the House and Senate committee decides to do here. We can only assume that you have really taken a very, very good look at this, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Qualley, it's a basic issue that there could be an exemption for rail employees in this.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Is your basic concern that there's no exemption for rail employees in this provision?
No.
Well, it doesn't. Rail employees don't need an exemption.
Okay.
They're employees. They can be on the property.
Okay.
So it doesn't. They don't need an exemption. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Qualley, then I guess it's kind of simple. I'm trying to figure out what might be the problem. I mean, we don't want pedestrians crossing in opposition to the arms and the signals and things. And, I mean, is there something simple? It just seems like a simple, common sense kind of a deal. I'm struggling with why.
Mr. Qualley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, thank you. I agree. And again, we, in principle, we support the idea that we want to keep the public off of the crossings. I simply believe that perhaps the matter should be more broadly looked at and more preventative measures to keep the public off the crossing. And
okay,
I have to.
All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to vote on this amendment. And Mr. Qualley, you and Senator Jungbauer and Representative Hortman are going to put together a bill for next year to look at this issue.
Thank you.
All right, great. On the Jungbauer-Hortman motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Representative Leader.
Senator Murphy, the first one dealing with that truck trailer issue. I've had a lot of both ways on that issue. I'm a little concerned. Maybe I don't quite understand.
Okay.
Really, what is this as far as this conference committee goes? We didn't move on that one.
No, we haven't moved on that yet. Then I can have Ms. Berezovsky kind of talk you through what this is. Ms. Berezovsky, we're talking about the SCOI bill with the insurance on the
number one on the first
single
sheet.
Motor vehicle.
Mr. Chair and Representative Leader, there are two provisions that are part of this, and one is found on R2 at the top of the page on the Senate side, 2.5. What was the page on the other one? And R35 on the Senate side, 29.17. And it has to do with the agency of a driver who is not the owner of a vehicle combination.
Yes.
And whether for insurance purposes. The driver may be deemed an agent of the owner of the self-propelled vehicle and or an agent of the owner of one of the trailers if they have different ownership. And this, I think, has gone both ways as it's gone through the committees. The bill as it stands right now says that when a motor vehicle is involved in an accident, it's driven by a person who is not the owner, but with the owner's consent, the operator of the vehicle is considered to be an agent of the owner of only the self-propelled vehicle, not of the trailer.
That's correct. And that's why I was wondering. See, Reverend Hornstein, that was in your committee? Mine too?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
I think it was in yours, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering what the testimony against it was, Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Leader, the best I could do with the argument against doing this is to say that it's a trial lawyer's argument. So I don't know how to make that. I didn't understand it, and I fully support. This is a Rod Skoy bill. I fully supported it over the objections of the trial lawyers. And once again, I didn't understand, and maybe one of the attorneys around here can help me with some of this liability issue, but common sense didn't seem like it applied. And I Representative Leader, I could state my position stronger.
No, I'm not.
But I think everybody's heard it once or twice. I mean, I think this is a good provision. I think it makes sense. And it also protects an industry from lawsuits that I think, truly believe, are not only frivolous, but brought about as kind of a punitive measure. I can't make the trial lawyer's argument for them. If they're here, they can come to the table and argue why we should not do this. But oh, Mr. Carlson, please come. After I just got done waxing you, you can come to the table now and wax me back. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for the opportunity to address you today. My name is Joel Carlson. I represent the Minnesota Association for Justice, and the issue that is before you maybe appear to be complicated, but I can tell you that what is in the Senate bill is a significant change in the law that has been in place since 1945, and it has to do with owners of motor vehicles. In 2005, there was a simple renumbering of a statute that was carried in the Omnibus Data Practices Bill by Mary Liz Holberg, and that has created a conflict over the definition of a motor vehicle. And I will tell you that the language that is here is not entirely the Skoy bill, because Section 1 amends the No-Fault Auto Act, by the way, as it relates to motor vehicles. But section on page 29, section 34, does not include all of the Skoy bill, because the Skoy bill said that the definition of a motor vehicle is 65B.43, which has been the law since 1945. We oppose this position because we think it's part of a larger discussion about what the definition of a motor vehicle is and what was intended in 2005. And so that is why we have been working to try and find a solution, but this is not it, and it is strongly opposed by our association on behalf of consumers who are involved in motor vehicle accidents. This is not about frivolous lawsuits. This is about people who are seriously injured by accidents with semi-trailers and trucks. Mm-hmm. And right now, without a fix, a trailer is not a motor vehicle in Minnesota, and that is what we are trying to fix. Not this.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Carlson, so is it your contention or not that a tractor and trailer should be one vehicle.
Mr. Carlson.
Senator Murphy and Representative Erdahl, I've ventured into the Judiciary Committee many times over the years, and I will tell you that as to the cause of an accident, a tractor and trailer are one motor vehicle. But as to who pays damages when they have separate owners, that mm-hmm. is a separate issue as to who pays damages. As to causing the accident, they are linked. They are not separated because the trailer can't move on its own. So your question mm-hmm. is they are treated as one as it relates to causing the accident. Yeah. And that has been the law
Representative
since
Hortman.
1945.
I have a question. If I'm driving my minivan and I get into an accident with a semi that's pulling a trailer, and the trailer has been inadequately maintained by whoever owns the trailer, and due to that inadequate maintenance of that portion of the vehicle, I'm injured. The semi driver is a guy who lives out in the middle of nowhere, and he doesn't have the right insurance. Turns out I don't have any recovery against him. If we pass the SCOI provision, is the person who owns the trailer not responsible to pay for any of my damages or injuries, even if they were negligent?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, the status of the law today, Representative Hortman, is that the trailer owner has no liability to the motoring public because of the renumbering.
Even if that person is negligent.
Because of the renumbering in 2005, a trailer is no longer a motor vehicle. And so the case in point, which is called Randy V, the court found that a trailer was no longer a motor vehicle, and they were dismissed at summary judgment because of the change that was made. And no one intended that. That was not what was intended.
Ms. Backus, can you come to the table, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Amber Backus, Leonard Street and Dinard, on behalf of the Minnesota Trucking Association, and I would have to dispute what Mr. Carlson just said. The V case had to do with making the trailer owner liable or trying to for the error of the driver. There was no negligence shown, direct negligence, on behalf of that trailer owner. Under this scenario and under current law, you can go after a trailer owner for their own direct negligence. What we're trying to do is just ensure that if someone else is driving the vehicle, because oftentimes the truck driver doesn't own the tractor or the trailer, it's somebody else's equipment, and there's an accident due to their own negligence, that all liability flows through the owner of the tractor trailer. That's how the motor carrier industry operates. All of the contracts between carriers and shippers and insurance companies and trailer leasing agencies, that liability flows with the tractor owner. So we just want to make sure that the trailer owner is not responsible due to the driver's negligence. If there is direct negligence on behalf of the trailer owner, you can pursue that now. You have been able to since 2005, and you would be able to under the Senate language.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you. Then, Ms. Backus, can I ask you the same question? Before the year 2005, if I got into that accident, would I be able to recover against the trailer owner?
Yes, you would have been able to.
And today, under the law as it currently is, after we did that cleanup that we thought didn't have any substantive effect, is that the case?
For the direct negligence of the trailer owner, yes.
Mr. Chairman and members, maybe we're making headway. This is the first time the truckers have indicated that a trailer owner has ever been liable prior to 2005. They've said before that a trailer owner has never been held accountable and that it is us that is trying to change the law. So that's completely different than what we've heard for the entire our fix that we agreed to with Representative Welty and Atkins and Holberg was to just simply repeal this renumbering in 2005 and go back to the law the way it was in 2005. And that was agreed to by us. It's not agreed to by them any longer. But we're fine to just go back to the way the law is. We don't want to change it. It was just fine. this is a substantial change in the law. It hasn't been vetted. I don't believe, I know in the Civil Justice Committee, because Representative Welty withdrew his hearing after we reached an agreement on this provision. And so, you know, this is a substantial change in the law. All we want to do is go back to the law prior to 2005, which is in a separate bill carried by Senator Betzel and Representative Holbert.
Okay, we're going to vote on this issue. Representative Hortman and then Representative Leader.
Okay, I apologize, but I do have one more question then for both the testifiers. In my scenario, if you change the fact of who is negligent, and you say a semi-driver is negligent, and I'm in my minivan and I'm paralyzed after this accident, and the semi-driver has insurance but no other assets and the policy limits are like $250,000, and the trailer, whoever owns the trailer has insurance, if the trailer owner is not negligent, but the semi-driver is, before 2005, do I recover against both the pulling part as well as the trailer? And how is that different after we change the law?
Mr. Chair, Representative Portman, a couple problems with your assumption there. First of all, federal law requires a minimum of $750,000 on that tractor trailer together. So you're not going to have only $200,000. And again, the way the industry operates, all that flows through the motor carrier who's operating it, who's responsible for the tractor, not the trailer. There isn't any sort of coverage on the trailer. There hasn't been because they haven't had to have it. So pre-2005, if the driver was negligent, there was no definition of motor vehicle in state statute. Somebody could have gone to court and tried to make the trailer owner liable. I don't know of any case law during that time where someone was successful doing that. Since 2005 in the V case, the plaintiffs were trying to make the trailer owner liable for the actions of the driver, which would expose the industry to now having to have trailer insurance, which they never had before, because that $750,000 federally required insurance flows through the tractor owner. So
I think the chair would call on Mr. Carlson next.
Mr. Carlson, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman and members, owners of motor vehicles have liability to the motoring public. And when they're involved in an accident, they should be held responsible if they are. In this particular instance, Randy V was injured by the trailer that was pushed into an intersection that he was properly going through on a motorcycle, over $3 million of medical damages alone. And the trailer owner who was involved in that transaction was not held accountable at all. And we think that that's not the way the law should be when there is coverage available. It's very rare when it happens.
But my question is that a change? Is what we're talking about changing the way things have always been?
Yes. What happened by a simple renumbering in 2005 changed the law. Yes. And that is the holding of that case.
Ms. Backus.
Just one quick thing. Thank you for indulging me, Mr. Chair and Representative Hortman. A few minutes ago, Mr. Carlson did say that tractor and trailer are one motor vehicle for liability purposes, and then he just said the trailer injured the person on the motorcycle. That trailer can't operate on its own. It's got to happen because of what happens with the truck and tractor, and it was the driver who was at fault. And we're not trying to get folks off the hook from that liability. There is a way to recover, and it's through the tractor owner. And as I said, federal laws are a minimum of $750,000 insurance. Most carriers have more. For hazmat, it's $5 million.
I guess I have the gavel. Representative Bernie. Leader, and then Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, I didn't realize all this. I think it shouldn't be in our domain. I think it should have been to other committee, and that's my concern, because right. I don't know. I'm not an attorney, and I don't feel confident right. to get into this, and I just didn't figure all of this was going on. It's a decision, I think, that should be made by another committee, not by our transportation committee.
It's a legal issue.
Appear to me, I don't know.
All right, well,
voted on it.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I support Senator Leader's. Sounds like a civil judiciary committee matter. My question, I'm now completely confused. Don't know who to believe. My question is to both of the witnesses. Is it possible, I mean, to Senator or to Representative Hortman's point, of course trailers can't move on their own, but sometimes they're contributory because of a failure on the part of that trailer owner. As Backus says, well, then, you know, they can be held liable. As Carlson says, they can't. That's where we're confused. Supposing that the tractor driver is initially held responsible, but it's determined that the trailer played a role in the incident, can the tractor driver or the tractor owner turn around and themselves recover from the trailer owner?
Senator Murphy might be in a position to answer that. He's carrying a bill right now to address indemnification between the cab owner and the trailer owner, which right now, and Representative Morrow is carrying the same bill in the House. And trailer owners are requiring cab owners to indemnify them from any responsibility that the trailer might have, which we also think is wrong.
But Mr. Carlson, that's kind of an unfair depiction of what that bill is. They are responsible for their own actions. If they decide not to maintain the brakes on the trailer and the vehicle gets away, the trailer owner is going to be responsible. But what that bill does...
Under your bill.
Yes, but what that bill does is it protects them from liability if they would drive onto somebody else's property and something would happen, and then they would not be responsible for the actions of somebody else. That's kind of what we're trying to do with that bill. But members, I think this horse has been whipped pretty much to death. And Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very quickly, I just would reiterate that I think in the House, it's sitting in civil justice, and I think Representative Leader's point is very well taken, that this is now it's partly a transportation issue. It's a lot of it is a judicial issue, and so I think many of us on our side would not feel comfortable, I think, moving forward, but I mean, it's up to the committee to decide ultimately. I think it's a little different than a couple of the Senate provisions we just took that were not so controversial, that were clearly transportation oriented.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Carlson, will you finish your answer to Senator Dibble, please? I apologize for interrupting.
My point, Senator Murphy, on your indemnification bill, which is something that we support, is that trailer owners are requiring the cab driver to indemnify the trailer owner even from their own negligence, even when the trailer is not maintained. And your bill would prohibit, it would call those agreements void. And we support that because we think that's wrong.
Oh, okay, I had the cart in front of the horse, sorry. Or the
cab
trailer
in front of the trailer.
In front of the cab, yeah, right. Okay. All right, Ms. Backus, did you have anything else? All right, did somebody want to move this language? All right, well, it's not in the bill then. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members,
there is one issue that I'd like to kind of go back to. Never mind. Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, I had that amendment worked on the vehicle crimes unit. I didn't know if we...
We decided not to put vehicle crimes in the...
Drop the whole
thing. Yeah, we're gonna wait till... you're going to wait until next year to do that.
When I'm the chair of the committee.
Are you changing parties?
Oh, no, I don't think there'll be any necessity for that, Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you never know. Members, we're at the end of the list. Do any of the members have anything else? No, Representative Erdahl, and then Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just following up on my question of Peterson earlier, I think he has a total of MnDOT money.
Mm-hmm.
Did I hear from
you? Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Scott Peterson from MnDOT. I appreciate the opportunity to more fully answer Representative Erdahl's question. We went through the fiscal note and picked out some things that have fiscal impacts in the bill. And basically, in
2011, we have $11,000 for complete streets. We do have a fiscal impact on the Council for Transportation Access, but we also have, I mean, we have an appropriation to cover that. Plus, it largely replaces activity that's already going on in the department. We have the Interagency Council on Transit Coordination, which performs essentially the same function. So that this is actually a positive fiscal impact for us in that it appropriates money for activities that we're currently funding from existing appropriations. The railroad safety grant language, we think there'll be roughly a $3,000 a year fiscal impact for that. And the transit bill that Representative Morrow had, is about $10,000 a year, we believe, to fully comply with the requirements in that provision. And then further on into the future, the complete streets bill has a $30,000 impact in 2012, we think, related to the additional reporting. And also in our fiscal note on the bridge program modifications that require us to look at pedestrian facilities for, on bridge projects, we weren't sure how that would impact our bridge construction, because we currently do look at whether or not a trail is required when we build a bridge. But our bridge folks thought that this changed the time frame for that type of analysis, so it might require additional bridges to have these trail facilities added to them, and that might involve $500,000 per bridge on average to add those facilities. So that's largely the additional cost. The DBE provision by itself didn't have a cost, but I neglected to mention when I was up here before that there is that $200,000 appropriation to implement some of the recommendations that come out of the collaborative. But that's money is appropriated in the bill.
Representative Erdahl, are you good to go there?
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Jungbauer, did you have... Oh, I thought you had your hand up earlier.
No, we're...
Never mind, I was wrong. Members, there were three things on the Senate-only provision, page one. If you go one, two, three, from the bottom, we're looking at four, five, and six from the bottom on page one. The one is expands the eligibility for veterans plates to recreational vehicles and one-ton pickups. And then the next two above that were Senator Vickerman's legacy plates. And Senator Seaton would move all three of those with one motion.
Be happy to, Mr. Chair.
Senator Saltzman would...
Senator Saltzman would move all three of those in one motion.
Could I ask one question?
Representative Leader.
Are you including the impaired victims with the Korean defense people? Is that what you're doing?
No. This adds the Korean defense. It creates the special plate emblems for the expeditionary, Korean Silver Star, Bronze Star, and also allows those veteran plates to be put on wreck vehicles and one-ton vehicles. Senator Saltzman.
I do want to move those, but I did want to just check, Mr. Chair. It seemed like when we heard about the recreational vehicles, there was a concern from, I think, from motor vehicles, because it's a different numbering system and it was going to have a different cost to it. Do you might... Just dreaming that up, or was there a concern with that?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senator Saltzman was correct that we did say that at the hearing, but then when I went back and talked with staff, it would not be something that we wouldn't we would be capable of making that change.
We would be able to
because it's an existing plate, and so they didn't think that that would be difficult for us to accommodate.
So with that, right. Mr. Chair, I just renew my motion.
On the Saltzman motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does prevail. Ms. Berzovsky.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted one, if you could clarify one thing for staff, because one of the people came up to me and asked about this and had a different impression than I did about the driver feedback and safety monitoring equipment that was part of the vetoed bill, and then the House took it out. And so we're just asking for clarification as to whether that language should be in the conference report.
Representative Hornstein.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, it should be in the report. There was a mistake, a misunderstanding that took place between, with Representative Junkie, and I think he would like this back in, and, and that we just decided it would be quicker to do this here than on the floor. So I just want to make sure, actually, that it is in.
Thank you for the clarification.
And I think we did vote that in.
Senator Dibble.
Oh, okay. So quick clearance was passed. Okay.
Members, there's a couple sections on the impaired drivers that I'd like to move. And this is Senator Michelle's bill that he has carried for the past couple, 3 years. This establishes a plate that families who, not only families who have lived through a terrible tragedy on our roads because of drunk drivers, but also people who want to support some of our law enforcement efforts and some of our efforts to keep people clean and sober before they go on the road. This plate would help with some of that funding. So, members, I would move those sections in regards to the impaired driver license plate. Further discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. There was one aye and one no. So.
He's very excited about special. We don't know what to do on special plates anymore. Yeah.
All right. Well, members, we're going to entertain one more motion, and that's from Representative Hornstein to direct staff to make the technical changes necessary to put a document together so that we can look at it on Monday. So, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would move that the proceedings of the committee be codified and the staff directed to make any technical changes that we agreed to.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Folks, once again, we're going to kind of loosely, we will sign the conference committee report on Monday. We're waiting to hear from the governor's office. If we have to do anything else with this bill, we will. But until then, it looks like we're done, and the conference committee is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think we're at all set. Thank you, my man.
Yeah, Matt.
There you have it. Well, I don't